Welcome to the Depth Dive. Today, we're really getting into the weeds, looking back at the story of Cognac Terrasson de Montlot.
That's right. We've got some fascinating bits and pieces here. Excerpts from family records, old letters, even some promotional stuff.
Yeah, it's quite a mix. And our goal really is to figure out what made this cognac so, well, prestigious. Why was it the go-to for European royals and, you know, the top tier in Paris?
And it starts deep, doesn't it? That first detail about the family being involved in wine growing and distilling since the 17th century.
Exactly. That just jumped out at me. That's not just starting a business. That's like generations of know-how, a real heritage.
Absolutely. It's a lineage, not just a company. And that key moment, 1695, acquiring the Anjou estate through marriage, that really rooted them in the Cognac region.
Mm-hmm.
And what's really interesting as you look through the history is how specific people in the family really shaped things.
Oh, definitely. Like Valentine de Terrasson de Montlot, born 1870. The record suggests she was actually involved in the vineyard work, plus she had good business sense.
Right, not just lending her name to it. She was hands-on.
Yeah. And then you have Alexandre back in the 1820s, who was a deputy and a mayor. He was sort of embedding the family name in the region's power structure, too.
Exactly. They were building influence alongside the business. These early figures laid the groundwork.
So when did the actual cognac, the drink itself, emerge?
Well, the origins trace back to the 18th century, but back then it was just called eau de vie, you know, water of life. What's really quite impressive is the scale they were operating at even then. About 60 hectares of vineyards.
60 hectares. That's pretty big for that time, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. Think roughly 80 football fields. Plus, three distilleries, the first one built in 1743, and two large cellars. This was a major operation from early on.
Wow. No wonder they got noticed. It sounds like they invested heavily right from the start.
It seems so. And it paid off. Terrasson de Montlot became a bestseller, mentioned alongside the big houses, and it started appearing in European royal courts.
That early success is fascinating. What do you think made their eau de vie stand out so early? Was it the land? The process?
That's the million-dollar question, isn't it?
Yeah.
The exact secrets might be lost. But their continued success suggests they hit on a quality formula early and stuck with it.
Makes sense.
Then, moving into the 19th century, the name evolves. It becomes Eau de Vie de Cognac, officially linking it to the region.
Okay.
And this period gives us some cool glimpses into how they operated, like remnants of a small train they used for the vineyards.
A train? Really? Just for the estate?
Seems like it. Which, you know, suggests a pretty modern and large-scale setup for the time. You can just picture it, can't you?
Yeah, definitely. And with that kind of scale, getting the cognac shipped out must have been a challenge.
Right. And the 19th century meant rail transport. But what I found really clever was their security.
Security?
Yeah, the barrels. They weren't just standard barrels. They were designed with double bottoms.
Double bottoms! To stop people stealing it.
Exactly. To deter theft during transport. It really shows how valuable the product was and, well, the kind of risks involved back then.
Was that sort of thing common? Protecting valuable goods during shipping?
Oh, absolutely. Theft was a major issue for anything valuable on the move.
Mm-hmm.
So this double bottom idea was quite a proactive measure.
Smart thinking.
And as their reputation grew, so did their presence in, you know, the fanciest places. Like chic Parisian hotels. We know they were served at the Hotel Continental.
Ah, the Hotel Continental, right. Imagine the people staying there being introduced to this cognac.
And we actually have a quote from the director there, a Mr. E. Leguay, back in 1883.
Oh, yeah. What do you say?
He described it as, get this, incredibly delicate with delicious flavors, infusing it with ever so rare balance.
Ever so rare balance. Wow. That's some praise. It really gives you a sense of refinement, doesn't it? Makes you wish you could taste what he tasted.
It really does. And an endorsement like that from a place like the Continental, that would have meant a lot.
I bet.
And the recognition kept coming. 1885, Henri Terrasson, Comte de Montlot, gets the Grand Diplôme d'Honneur avec Médaille d'Or in Lyon, the gold medal.
The highest honor, basically. So not just Paris, but wider recognition, real excellence.
Exactly. This was a big deal.
And didn't we see something about a booklet? Like testimonials?
Yes.
Yeah.
From 1883, the same year as that Leguay quote, they actually compiled testimonials, including his. It shows they understood marketing, even then, using social proof. You know?
Very savvy, like an early version of online reviews.
Huh, kinda. And what's also interesting is their pricing philosophy. they explicitly linked the price to the quality.
So not just charging what the market would bear?
Apparently not. It was about reflecting the inherent value, the quality of the eau de vie, and they stressed that their stuff was aged properly, ready to drink immediately.
They sound quite meticulous about everything.
Right down to the shipping. They preferred cases, again, to prevent fraud, offered different cask sizes, starting small at 25 liters.
And the delivery terms were specific too, weren't they?
Very. Franco at home for cities, basically. Delivered to your door, to the nearest station if you were in the countryside. To the border for international. And 40 days net for payment.
That level of detail is fascinating for the period. And we saw that ad from 1865.
Yep. Identifying those suppliers to both Hotel Continental and the Grand Hotel in Paris.
Mm-hmm.
Really cementing that top tier status early on.
All this care and quality, it's no surprise they attracted some, well, very high-profile customers.
Absolutely. The letters we have are incredible windows into that world.
Wow.
Like the one from Count of Benckendorff in 1894. He was Marshal of the Court for the Tsar of Russia.
The Tsar's Court. Wow.
Yeah. He writes admiring the cognac he tasted and asks about buying significant amounts for the Imperial Court.
That's a serious inquiry.
And there's a little note saying it was also served at the Cercle de Lyon in Paris, another super exclusive club.
So they were hitting all the right spots. The most elite circles.
Definitely. And it wasn't just a one-off with the Russians. There's correspondence with Prince Arzov about big orders, especially for the 1820 vintage.
Ah, the 1820. That year keeps popping up. It seems to have been legendary.
It really does. There's even a letter from 1926 talking about the last bit of 1820 stock that had been reserved for the prince back in 1923. So decades later, it was still highly sought after.
What do you think made that vintage so special? Just a perfect year?
Could be. Perfect harvest. Maybe something special in the distillation or aging. Without detailed records from that year, it's hard to say for sure, but the demand speaks for itself.
True. These letters really make it concrete, don't they?
Oh, yeah. There's one from 1920 confirming a delivery, 1,000 bottles of 1875 cognac, plus 4 hectoliters of the same stuff in bulk, going to the Comte Malo himself.
1,000 bottles. Maybe for his personal cellar or clients.
Could be either. And then, 1923, a London company called Ehrman's writes, they're interested in buying up stocks of 1820, 1848, and 1875 that the Comte held, acting for Russian clients. They even asked for samples.
So the demand was international, and these specific old vintages were like collector's items.
Precisely. And another letter from 1923 is quite revealing, too. Someone's asking about finding old-style Burgundy bottles.
Why?
For a very old cognac they were selling as an 1811 vintage, they wanted the presentation to be authentic. You know, the whole package mattered. It suggests clients who really cared about the details, the history.
Right. It wasn't just about the liquid. It was the experience, the authenticity.
Exactly.
Right.
So pulling it all together, you see this legacy built step by step on quality and reputation. We know the cognac came from Petit Champagne and Fins Bois Cross.
Which are good areas, right? Respected grief.
Very much so. Adds to the pedigree. And they consistently supplied the absolute top tier, the English court, the Russian Imperial Court under Tsars Alexander III and Nicholas II.
Having czars as repeat customers, I mean, that's about as prestigious as it gets.
You really can't overstate that. And that 1820 vintage just keeps echoing through the documents. Prince Arzov in 1924, Count of Benckendorff back in 1894,
yeah.
Both raving about it.
And we even have that specific reference, don't we, from the home of the last czar.
Yes. Detailing how the 1875 Montleu Cognac was served right at Tsar Nicholas II's table after dinner. It's such a direct link.
Incredible. And we can't forget the 1885 gold medal in Lyon again.
No, that's the official stamp. It confirms the excellence wasn't just perceived, it was recognized formally.
Okay, so wrapping up this this deep dive, what really stands out for me, it's the sheer length of history, this deep family commitment and how it touched everything, production, packaging, who they sold to.
Yeah, the quality seems non-negotiable throughout. And that client list royalty, top hotels, it's just remarkable.
The aha moment for me, I think, is seeing how that dedication, that almost obsessive focus on quality and detail allowed this family, this region, this product to gain such lasting international fame.
Absolutely. It's that combination, the family, the place, the unwavering standard.
Which brings us to a final thought for you listening. When you see this level of detail, this personal touch, this craftsmanship from centuries ago, how does that resonate today in our world of, you know, mass production, even in luxury goods?
Right. What does the story of Cognac Terrasson de Montleu tell us about what really lasts?
Mm-hmm.
What creates enduring value, something that stands the test of time?
Something to ponder, perhaps, over a good cognac.